All right, y'all ready?
Yeah.
Ready.
We're y'all ready for this?
No, 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 no.
Yeah, kids these days will never know the joys of getting Jock Jams Volume 1 on CD from Columbia House.
But I think they like still play it at pep rallies.
Oh, sure.
Like
sure. Of course they do.
Oh, yeah.
It's free. Let's just push play on
at
the
hockey games.
I never thought to check, but I mean, Jock Jams has got to be on Spotify, right? Jock Jams. Volume 1. Yeah, here we go. Jock Jams. Oh, yeah. It's got to be the first song.
All right. With that,
like, would I ever know what that song is called?
No.
Well, this is called "Get Ready for This" radio edit by Two Unlimited.
Two Unlimited. Yeah.
Sorry, I was just waiting for the tag. We couldn't leave those glow sticks in the air forever. You can proceed now.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you so much. We are days away from the 2024 Met Ball, one of the most exciting fashion days of the year, so naturally, your Tishy hosts are here to talk style. What is our personal style? Trendy? Classic? Non-existent? How has it changed over the years? What matters most? Is there such a thing as ethical consumption, or are we all just suckers for Bezos? In the Contempo Casual Studios in Austin, Texas, I'm Hillary Livingston Butler, and this show has everything. Joining me, I'm sorry, Anne, in the JJL Studios in New Brighton, Minnesota.
No!
Hi. I had to.
Well, I just looked up the theme for the Met Gala this year. It's the Garden of Time.
Whatever.
So I'm ready.
Yes, we're ready. It drops. It's Monday. So as this drops, you'll be seeing the pictures roll in. And everybody misinterpreting the theme, probably. In the Kittery Outlet Studios in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, it's Bobby Pate. My mother-in-law is always threatening to take me there. I'm like, I'm good. It's fine. We have some outlets down here.
We're more of a Rentham Premium Outlets family.
Okay. All right. And, I'm so sorry.
You know, once in a while, I'll find one thing at the Banana Republic that fits me. But more on that later.
And in the Chico Studios in Detroit, Michigan, it's Meredith Van Horn.
No. I was dying to see what you would choose, and now I'm dead.
Sorry, we can't record. Meredith died. as usual, we'll get into some small talk, some medium talk, some tea she recommends, and how you can get involved with the show. Okay, Anne, take us into small talk.
Oh, well, I think I just had to throw it right back to you because you're first on the list.
We're lobbing it back and forth. Okay, I'm going to make this quick, and I'm going to issue a trigger warning for those sensitive about...
Parasites?
Yes, parasites. I have always thought, and I think I jinxed myself, I've always thought, like, one of my biggest fears as a parent is one of my kids having lice. And I truly thought the other day, like, a couple weeks ago, like, well, I can't believe... they haven't had lice yet. Like, I had lice thrice when I was a kid. So I was like, you know, I can't believe it, but, you know, okay. Like, let's just keep going. Let's hope this trend lasts. And then last Tuesday, it was a really busy day at work. I was kind of running around and I was ready for lunch, trying to get it all together. And I get a call from Bridget's school. And this is what my like mental, this is what, how my brain went. I thought, oh, Bridget's probably stressed out about something, and I love my daughter so much, but when she's kind of minorly stressed or upset about something, she'll like go to the nurse and be like, I don't feel good. And so I had already like had my speech ready to say, you're fine. School's almost over. I'll come pick you up, if she wasn't really sick. So I'm like ready to kind of gently push her away. And the nurse says, hi, this is the nurse from her school. And Bridget came in complaining of an itchy head, and we checked her head and she has lice. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? So a girl that I work with saw me as I just like physically just went like
you must have just, yeah,
like, okay. Oh. And it was like, it's Whatever, the lice is the lice, but it's more about the trailing, like everything that comes with it. It's not just getting the lice gone. It's like all the sheets need to be washed. All, you know, all, like everything kind of needs to be done. Like check, does Rory have it?
It's not even sheets month.
And, you know, exactly. God. And it, you know, it's like, does Rory have it? Does Dave have it? Like whatever. And she had a trip planned this past weekend and all this kind of stuff. So I'm just running through the checklist in my head. Luckily, Dave works from home. So I messaged him, like, start stripping the beds. Like, we got to get this started. Do it on the hottest setting. You know, brushes, I don't care. Throw them away. Like, I don't care. They're gone. They need to go. So anyway, I call around. And luckily, there has been an invention since I was a kid. Because when I was a kid, you bought the shampoo from the grocery store or whatever. And I have this distinct memory of being on my kitchen counter, like laying down on my kitchen counter, my head in the sink, and my mom just like combing out my hair. Well, because like getting all the lice out and then combing out all the like nits and going through, and it's just taking a really long time. And my hair's curly and kind of tangly. So it was like just going through and going through. And you have to get all of them because if you miss one, then you have to kind of start all over again. Anyway, in the intervening time, they have these like lice salons, which you,
salon for lice.
They all have like little capes on and they're sitting underneath the dryers,
yeah, nice blow
little out. Curlers.
Can you imagine how hard the mani-pedi job is on lice?
Tiny little brushes.
So I call around. Some lady's like, oh, we can't get you until 8:30 tomorrow. You know, I'm like, no, it has to be today. So I found a place that's a little bit far from my house, but I was like, whatever, they could get us in today, and it had good reviews. So I go grab Bridget.
It's either that or she's sleeping in the tub tonight.
Yeah, sorry, sister. You're sleeping outside. I don't care. So we get up there. I have to say, while I maybe had to take out a second mortgage, not really, but it was not cheap, these women were amazing. Like, they were so good. We were there for like 3 hours. But she gets into the chair and the woman is like, she has had lice for a little bit. Like she, and I'm like, Bridget, what? Oh, I know. I'm like, how did you? And she was like, I didn't know. And, you know, she's at the age where I don't brush her hair anymore. You know, I used to brush her hair when she was, even a year ago, I was brushing her hair. But she's 12, you know, she has body autonomy. Like, I let her do that. She likes to brush her own hair. Anyway, she didn't notice it, I guess. She's like, yeah, she's had it. They're in all different stages of, you know, life cycles. And I'm like, oh my God, okay. And she was like, do you want to see? And I said yes. And now,
no.
Well, I said yes. And now it's like haunting my nightscape. I'm like, oh, I can't believe I saw that. Anyway, she gets all through. They brush it. Then they shampoo her hair and then do all this other little treatments. And then while some of the treatment was setting in her hair, she said, I'll check you. And then she sat me down. And she said, I'm just going to tell you, you probably have it. There's no way that she had it this bad that you don't have it. And I'm like, okay. But I was like, I'm pretty sure I don't, but like, whatever. Okay. And she looks and she's like, you don't have it. You don't have it anywhere. Wow. You really don't have it. And she was going through my hair for about 20 minutes. Anyway, we get done.
You haven't hugged your daughter in a while.
I guess not. I'm an uncaring, cold mother. Get away.
Is there any end of this story that doesn't end with CPS?
Well, I did think she was going to call CPS. Because she was
either
like,
you have lice or you're a bad mother or both.
No. Or you're not adequately taking care of your child's like body and happiness. No, then we get home and I'm like looking through Rory's. I had to buy the comb from them and I looking through Rory's hair. And I thought, I was like, oh, no, he has it. And then it just turned out to be like something from a tree branch that because he's Rory. And so I'm like, oh no. And I look through Dave's hair, you know, look through all the stuff, and it was clear. It was so crazy. And then she went back she went back yesterday. They included in the semi-exorbitant price, they have two checkups, and she was clear yesterday. So I think, knock on wood, we are in the clear. But yeah, it wasn't as, like, the treatment stuff minus the cost was fine. It was more just the making sure everything was washed, making sure everything was thrown away that was thrown away. It was just sort of one of those like, I've been through fire, but we got through it. And I mean, next it'll be like a broken limb or something. But right now we're good. Right now we're okay.
You can check the lice off the list because she'll never have them again.
Never. I did text my mom and I'm like, I am retroactively very sorry that you ever had to deal with that. She was like, I had to do it with all of you guys. And I'm like, I'm real. That sucks because I wouldn't want to do it. Ugh. And it would trigger sort of some OCD in me because I'm not a germaphobe when it comes to like, I mean, like I wash my hands and stuff, but I'm not really a germaphobe because I kind of think like, well, I can't wipe down every surface everywhere because I'm going to miss like a little square inch. And then that's like, so what's the point of even, I don't know, being so focused on it. But with lice, you kind of have to like get every single square inch. Otherwise, if you miss something, then there's going to be lice again and it's going to infest you. Anyway, so I'm glad I didn't have to do that. So yay. Being a parent is so fun. I love it so much.
I don't think I ever had lice. I mean, maybe my mom can clarify, but I don't think I ever had it. I don't think my brothers. I have a really vague memory of being like 6 or 7 and having maybe a lice check at school.
For sure. Because I remember when I had lice and my mom had treated it. And then the next day, the nurse came in to do a lice check. And I remember, you know, in your fourth grade brain, you're like not connecting the dots. So I was like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. Like, she's going to be upset because I have lice and there's going to be something left over. I don't know. And then I got back there because she did it like in a corner or something. And she was like, your mother called us. And I was like, oh, okay. So, I mean,
you were patient zero.
I was patient zero. So probably somebody in your class had lice. So they just did a lice check. I did learn from these ladies at Fairy Lice Mothers, which I can't ever really keep that.
Excuse me?
That's the name of the business. What? Fairy Lice Mothers. They were really good. And I hope they're getting paid a lot of money. But she said they're more attracted to clean hair because it's easier to glom onto the surface of your, that they need like the surface of your hair, or the surface, your scalp to like, you know, get nutrients. And if you have lots of like product in your hair or your hair is really dirty, it's harder to like latch on to your scalp. They also don't survive. Pets can't get it. I mean, pets get fleas, but pets can't get it. And they don't survive like on a surface if they can't latch on to like a scalp. Like, it's not like if one's just there, then they'll like multiply on the surface of your counter or whatever. Anyway, things you learn from Fairy Lice Mothers.
What a name.
I know. Anyway, that was my journey. Anne,
I got my new bed. Yeah, guys,
your adjustable bed.
Woo. My adjustable bed. We talked, so I don't know, like a month ago now, because I was asking you guys for advice on how to not pull the trigger so fast in decision making and getting to the point where you just want to get it done with. And so you're like, yeah, that one's fine. Let's go.
Yep.
So I ended up going down to the online mattress showrooms, which my mom had recommended that I mentioned, which is a guy who has a little space where he has accumulated basically one of every mattress that you could buy online. So you could go down there and test it before you buy. And then if you order through him, he'll get you a discount.
Hey.
So I took my mom. I'm like, okay, your job is to hold me back and slow me down and not let me get into that mode where I'm just like, ugh, I want to be done with this. So we went down there and we lay on a lot of beds and I picked one out. And honestly, I don't think he has everything, but there's a lot of beds there. And I was asking him if there was anything that I needed to know because I was going to order an adjustable bed. And he was like, no, no, you can order any one of these mattresses. By the way, we have adjustable bases. We carry those too, if you want one of those. And we talked and I was like, okay, I'm going to take the mattress and I'm going to take the adjustable bed. And I'm like, he's writing up the order for me. And I turn to my mom and I was like, you were supposed to stop me from doing this. And she said, but you made good choices.
So
I ended up getting a Helix, a Midnight Luxe.
I've heard that on many a podcast ad. And I'm like, that sounds really good.
It does. It's the best seller, he said, I think by a fair amount. And I was like, well, one hates to, you know, run with the crowd. But
I mean, Wired has it at the top of their list. And if Wired says it's the right bed,
then, it's probably the right bed. It's a good all-rounder from what I could tell. But I'll give you some numbers so that you know. I just for shits and giggles, when I got home, I went to the Helix website and I looked up the price of the mattress, and it was like, I don't remember the exact numbers right now, but it was like $2,100 on sale, heavy quotation marks, for $1,850, which is, of course, they've just jacked up the price so that they can put it on sale all the time. But then they have this required $250 upcharge for like their cool tech cooling fabric. And the guy at the mattress place was like, yeah, I don't know why they do that, because it's standard in all the mattresses and all the other companies just build it into the price, but they don't. They just have this non-negotiable, like you can't opt out of having the cool tech fabric or anything. Like, it comes on the mattress. So my theory, of course, is they're still trying to keep that MSRP low.
Yes. Sure.
Yep.
So it's still under $2,000, and then they just tack on the fees afterwards.
Weird that your bed came with valve stems.
Yeah, right. So I think the ending, so the mattress would have been like $2,100. He got it to me for $1,450.
Wow.
Pretty
right? Good. So I recommend this place. I don't know if you can just order through him.
I mean,
if you don't live in the area, but I don't know. It seems sort of like a good deal. And then he gave me the adjustable base for like $529.
Nice.
And it was a basic model. And he was like, listen, you can get a better or the upgraded deal. And it has a vibration, which is not massage. It's vibration. I was like, okay.
And it has a motel rooms I've seen that in.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Gross.
It's not a mattress that needs your back or anything. He said that's what people think it is, but it's not. I don't know. And then it comes with like a couple of presets, so you can set it exactly where you want to and just push the one button, you know. But he said the cost for that, he said he didn't think was worth it. So I did that. So then the story goes to when the adjustable bed arrived. And because I am a crazy person, I hauled that 132 pounds
oh my God.
Of face up a flight of stairs by myself.
Oh my God.
No, Anna.
You got your weights in.
No kidding.
I sure did. And it's like, as far as like the shape and size of it goes, you know, when you fold a ping pong table in half for storage.
Yeah,
it's kind of those dimensions because it's folded in half is what it is. So it's this big, flat, rectangular thing with lots of pokey bits on it. And I was sweating so much I had to take a shower when I was done. And there were parts where I was like, I don't know if this is going to happen, actually.
You're like, I might fail at this.
I don't know, but my retail background, once again, comes to the rescue because there were so many times when I had to move something or deal with furniture or whatever where I was by myself and it had to get done. Yeah. So I got it done. Yeah. So I got it done. And I have this mass of now yellow bruises covering like half of one of my forearms. And my mom yelled at me by text when I told her. So, mom, I'm going to need you to fast forward about a minute right now. Nobody tell my mom that when the mattress came, I did the same thing. The mattress was only 120 pounds. And
only?
It was 12 pounds lighter. And it's a better shape. You know, Bobby and Meredith, you've gotten the mattresses in a box, the vacuum sealed mattresses in a box.
Yes.
And it's more compact and there are no hard pokey bits. And most importantly, there are handles cut into the sides of the box. And so I did not have to take a shower when I was done with that one, but I got it all set up. It works great. I have a good night's sleep. I don't like my new pillows because my primary pillow, I don't know if it's as old as me, but I wouldn't be surprised. I know I didn't purchase it. My mother purchased it way back down the road. And I'm sure I've had it since I was in junior high, at least. And a couple of months ago, it just basically started to disintegrate. Like, there were little puffs of feathers coming out all over the place. And I was like, I can't. Like, I love, it's so flat. It's a pancake pillow. And I love it. I don't want any neck support or head support. I just want it to be squished flat to the bed. And you can't get that in a new pillow because they're all working the way they're supposed to be working. So I don't know. I don't like this, guys, but I just have to get used to it. I got the flattest pillow I could find, and I'm just going to have to deal with it.
Cheap IKEA pillows are good for being really flat straight off the bat, like the $2 IKEA pillows.
It's not right, though. It's not right for me. It has to be like a rag doll. That's what I want, a scrap of fabric.
I mean, they're also mildly scented like Swedish meatballs, but...
I will say the off-gassing on the mattress is almost done. That's...
Sure. Yeah.
And how bad was
interesting.
It?
And not overpowering. It's not like, ugh, I can't sleep in here, but it's like, ugh, man.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this to
Does
dissipate.
It smell like a nail polish remover?
No. Not really. Okay. I didn't think so.
I don't know why that was what is in my head.
I don't know. But we're almost there with all this. Now I have the new bed, the adjustable base, two new nightstands, new lamps.
Whoa.
I ordered headboard brackets. I didn't know that you had to get separate headboard brackets for the adjustable base. And I'm going to put those on and make sure that they're going to handle the headboard I want. Them getting the headboard, them getting the TV.
I'll throw this out there, Ann.
No, I'm not doing the C-clamps, Bobby.
It works. Also,
I'm sure it does.
If you ever have to move that mattress again, you know, we have this really heavy mattress. It's a Prana Sleep mattress. Sam picked it out. She loves it. I think it's fine. But the first time we moved it from apartment to apartment, I swore to a lot of things I would never do it again. But of course, it's us. So we moved again.
Course.
Is
it a latex mattress?
It has some sort of layer. I let Sam pick the mattress she wanted. I think there is a latex layer in it of some kind.
Yeah.
I bought on Amazon a queen size bag that looks like a blue tarp and zips all the way around it just because the bed really doesn't have handles on it. And that bag probably saved either injury or worse from moving it again. So there are ways, if you ever have to move that thing again, other than sucking all the air out and trying to like I did once with one of those. But I feel your pain on the injury front, because that mattress and I did 20 rounds the last time time we had to move it. Fine, use the frame. I didn't even know they made brackets for that. That's why I bought the C-clamps. I would have just bought the brackets.
Well, anyway, so that's the update on the bed. We're almost there. Very happy. It's like the first time in forever that I've actually bought anything new, not from IKEA.
Yeah, it's exciting.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm a grown-up.
You are.
The other unfortunate side effect was that I bought new sheets, and I bought a new comforter and new pillowcases and everything. And then as I was putting it all together, I was like, shit, I'm gonna have to paint. I'm gonna have to paint because this wall color looks stupid now with this color scheme. So,
projects.
But I gotta build up some emotional energy I tackle that. So I'm not gonna worry about it for now.
Because I know there's no I mean, you and I are not the same, but I sometimes I withhold on doing stuff because there's no half measures in it. Like, I'm not going to half-ass it. And it's like, I can't gear up the energy to do this right now. Like, all the energy I know that's required of this, I can't do it right now. So it'll have to be at a later moment.
Sure.
Right now. Yeah.
Well, and I'm trying, with the help of much therapy, to like be okay at things taking the time that they take.
Yes.
Like, not feeling like as soon as it goes on the list, I have to get it done, I have to get it done, I have to get it done. Just trust that at some point I will feel ready to do it. And then I can do it instead of like dragging myself by my own collar to do something that I feel like needs to get done.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
We'll see. It'll happen when it happens.
Woot, woo.
Woot, woo. So that takes me to my other piece of small talk. Also, a few weeks ago, I talked about having vapor testing from the Pollution Control Agency in my house because they called us up and they said that when the site was developed, it was on top of a commercial dry cleaner. And at the time, they tested and did mitigation or whatever that they could. And now in the last 25 years, they've had some technology updates. They have new technology and they're just like, can we just come in and like do this new stuff? And I was like, sure. So they came in and put the vapor wells or whatever and took a sample and sent it off. And last week, last Friday, the guy from the Pollution Control Agency called me and he's like, yeah, so there's commercial dry cleaning chemicals underneath your house, underneath all the houses in your block. And yours was the worst.
Like, no.
Oh, cool. Great.
I'm the best. I'm the best.
I have poison under my feet.
Oh, my God. Well, you know.
So he said it's not the kind of thing where it's like you have to get out. You can't live here. I mean, I've been here for 15 years, so I don't know, like, what's going to happen in the next month. That's, you know, somehow different from the last 15 years. But he so he said it's not like an imminent threat, but we should get this taken care of. And I said, so what's the outcome? You'll do mitigation and will that get rid of the contaminants and then we'll be done with it? Or is this something that's going to have to be done in perpetuity for the lifetime of the house? And he said, yeah, it's going to have to be done forever, basically, because they just, because it's underneath the house. Yeah. There's just no way to get it out. It's in the soil and all of that stuff. So they're going to install some, well, he called them radon fans. So I guess they must use them for radon deposits, but that'll like suck it out and suck the vapors out and like blow it out into the air outside.
Yeah, it's weird that it blows all the vape out in like a strawberry scented cloud.
So cool.
It smells like crisp linen.
Just a vaping aside, since none of you are listening to TBTL, Mike Frizzell came up on TBTL today, yesterday's episode, today's episode, one of those. And Andrew was talking about how he misses Mike a lot, especially when Mike would message him late at night. And what he left out is that what Mike would message him was random videos of dudes blowing giant vape clouds. Andrew hated it. So I have to remember to stay up really late one of these nights and send that to him. Yeah.
Didn't Andrew vape for a long time?
Yeah, as a stepping stone off of smoking, I think. Right. So.
Yeah.
And let's just say, I don't know how Andrew still ingests what he still ingests that isn't nicotine, but yeah. So anyway.
But it's not good for you.
No.
Well, right. So I got to remember to stay up and troll Andrew one of these nights.
The ghost of Mike Frizzell.
In his memory, I feel it's part of
a tribute.
As a friend, I feel it's my responsibility to just bring that little bit of joy.
So anyway, if you guys notice me like getting stupider or something.
I will say all of your clothes always seem perfectly pressed.
That's the reason. Yeah. I really was not expecting this to amount to anything. And I'm not freaked out by it because, like,
again,
what am I supposed to do?
Right.
You know? I'll leave the freaking out and I'll just work with the pollution control and, you know, let them come install the fans and then I'll live my life and that's fine. I don't have any pets. I don't have any kids. Yeah. Like, whose brain is going to be damaged?
Please.
In a world of things that are trying to kill us, I try not to worry about the slow ones.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you should give some thought to the slow ones, but yes, in general, it's not an ongoing exposure, but there could be. Let's put it that way. Like, if something were to happen, there is a reservoir of poison underneath my house.
Looking at that way.
Hey, Meredith, does that, like, rise to the level of your money pit stuff? Maybe.
How much is it going to cost you is the question.
I don't think it's going to cost anything.
Then no. The whole point of a money pit is that it costs a lot of money.
True. Well, we'll see. I got the impression that it wasn't going to cost me anything. If that changes, I'll let you know. We can reevaluate that.
Suddenly rethink those risk factors.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and he said, actually, I was going to move off this topic, but it just made me remember. I was like, yeah, just whatever. I'll do whatever I need to do and cooperate with the contractors, and they'll come in and we'll figure out where to put it, and it'll be fine. And he was like, great. And I don't even know how we got onto it, but he said there are some people that are just like, no, I don't want any mitigation.
What?
I don't want anyone in my house. I don't want it. And I was like,
what?
Sure. And he said, you know, some people just don't want anybody in their private property in their space and whatever. But then that means if they ever sell the house, they're going to have to disclose.
Yeah,
that.
Absolutely. That's wild.
So I don't. Yeah, I know. Right. Who wouldn't, especially if there's no cost to you, who wouldn't want to get it taken care of? Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Get off my property.
I guess so. Don't tread on me.
They think
a government agency wants to get into my house.
They're going to come in for the dry cleaning chemicals. They're going to find the whiskey still in the meth lab.
Oh, God. They got more problems if that's the case.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go on to Bobby. You are knowledgeable in all things fine arts, and that does now include art.
Yes, I wanted to just mention this. I don't know if I brought this up years ago last time I did this, but now that I'm back in Boston and there's the pandemic is, you know, over in the way that we're not worried about it anymore anyway.
No.
I have picked back up something I did, I don't know, must have been 2018 or 2019, and served as a juror, a rural juror, on the Mass Art senior illustration class portfolio review.
That is the most Bobby thing I have ever heard in my life. It's
no. what pray tell qualifies you to serve in this capacity?
Well, that is interesting, right? So I got this gig years ago because a friend of mine, Nick, who also runs a small not-profit performing arts group in town, and we used to be office roommates. He did a project years ago where some illustration students from Mass Art did some covers for a gala program for him because of a connection through somebody involved with that gala. And as a result of that, the woman who runs the illustration department at Mass Art asked him if he would come do this thing where it's senior portfolio day, all the seniors come into a big atrium and there are big long tables set up and there's
school seniors.
And I thought it was two.
Sorry, I should have clarified. These are soon to be college graduates, not octogenarian artists. I did not go to Brookhaven, the old folks home, to jury coloring art.
That's what I thought too. That's just why I was like, this is so Bobby.
Your needlepoint technique is spectacular, Doris. No, these are college seniors. And they were looking for more people, and Nick had roped me in at that point, even though neither of us between us has any knowledge, experience, or ability in illustration at all. And so we've done this a few times now. I did it, I think, online once during early COVID. And we go together to this thing and feel like absolute frauds. So there's a room full of like 36 or so like professional illustrators in different fields, you know, 3D artists and game developer artists and watercolor painters and, you know, all these folks who are like serious art people. And then there's a handful of like marketing agency, you know, talent scouts basically or whatever. And then there's a handful of people who are like nonprofit executives from other sectors, but they have some art experience, like the director of the zoo. This was just earlier today. The director of the local zoo was there. Someone from the aquarium was there. And then there's just us two chuckle fucks down at the end.
And your credentials say Bobby Pape, comma, local guy.
Yeah. So I mean, it says executive director of Blue Heron, but these kids don't know what the fuck a Blue Heron is. And then Nick, this is just a wonderful little aside about this. Nick is the executive director of Cantata Singers, a chorus that I worked for many years ago. And when he took over that job, the previous manager had gotten, had had a new logo designed for them that was really not great, and it had weird spacing in it, and so it looked like Can, Ta, Ta, Singers, and we always used to joke about how the Tatas were just floating off. And because that was the logo when he first started doing this gig, every year, no matter how many times he reminds them, his name badge says Can, Ta, Ta, Singers. So we switched somebody's seat so that we could sit next to each other, and we just did our best. And these kids, I shouldn't say kids, they're, you know, early 20s, young artists, but they're coming out of mass art. They've studied art for several years. Most of them have very little to no practical life skill outside of art. And they sit down, and I always just look at them and I say, okay, we're going to talk. You're going to show me your portfolio. I'm going to tell you what I like. And then we're going to talk about what your plan is after you get out of here, because somehow or another you have to eat. So like, they talk to all these other experts who are like, oh, your technique here is blah, blah. I don't even know how to fake what the other experts are talking to them about. And then I talk to them and I say, oh, okay, so this is this kind of illustration. How do you see, what are you doing in 2 months? After you graduate, and the really good ones are like, well, I'm applying to grad programs, or I have some internships lined up, or I'm applying for jobs that are related this way. And then some of them are just like, I don't know. And I was like, okay, so I'm here today to tell you, you need to start thinking about that. Like, and I was like, you know, it's the same chat I give a lot of people. I used to do this with composers a lot too when I was doing new music. Like, you need to find time to do what you love, and you need to find time to make money. And if you can figure out how to do those things at the same time, that's great. Doesn't always happen that way. So like, the best one I had today was like, I want to do children's books. Her work was really, really, really good, actually. And she's like, and I've already sent my stuff off. She's got her own book that she wants to get published, and she wants to do illustrations and covers. And she's like reaching out to all the major publishing houses, and is really well organized and really well spoken, and probably has great written materials. And then I talked to at least 3 artists today who were just like, I don't know. And I was like, well, do you want to use your art for work? Like, do you want to take orders from someone on exactly what you need to draw or paint to create for editorial or for, you know, marketing projects or things? Or do you just want to make your watercolors and put them in galleries? Because if you want the latter, that's fine. But you also have to go get a job. Yeah. And like, even if they're good, you have to go get a job, because even if you're good, that doesn't pay rent.
What really the question should be is, what do your parents do for a living? Oh, yeah. How much property do they own in the world? What does their portfolio look like?
Yeah, most of them, it is literally like, so you've disobeyed your parents and came here for art instead of becoming a doctor or a lawyer. So yeah. What do we do next?
Yes.
And most of the kids I talked to today, their art was either good or pretty good. I don't think I had anybody who I was like, oh, what do you, yikes, you know.
It'd be like if I was in there and it's like a stick figure or something. Well, right. Like, it's abstract.
I know this sounds dumb, but I can't even draw stick figures. So I'm like, again, completely unqualified to be there. But
no, I agree. I cannot draw a realistic stick figure. Yeah. No. Like, they just, yep. It's a bad stick figure, Anne.
After you talk to each of them, and I think I talked to 6, and then afterwards there's like this floating social time where they can all just walk around and say hi. So the 6 I talked to, and then a bunch more, they hand you an envelope after, and it's got like small samples of their work in it and a thank you note.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'll go through them. I'll try to find the ones I talked to on LinkedIn and connect with them. And there were a couple of them who, like, I would legitimately love to hire to do illustrations for my concert posters for next year if I had any money for that, but I don't.
Sure.
But I'll try to stay in touch. And it's always like, well, and I told them, I was like, you got to network. Like, yeah. If you want to do commercial illustration for small groups like mine, somebody's going to find you, because they're going to say to me at a meeting, like, hey, do you know anyone who could do this? And I'd be like, oh, I met this person, you know, blah, blah, blah. All of this is in small talk just to say, if any of you need an art critic, I am available. And I should say, I did get an honorarium for the gig. So,
hey,
I'm a paid art critic.
I need to look away from this page, because I just, like, I'm editing the show this week, and I will write down little notes, like, I coughed or whatever. And then I just wrote down Bobby Pape, comma, local guy. It keeps making me laugh. I make it the title. I don't know. We'll see. Bobby Faye, local guy.
No, this episode's not about me. You can't do that. I'm sure we'll get something in Medium Talk.
If we want to. Bobby actually makes a good point here. No, Bobby makes an excellent point here about what are you going to do with this. And I think this is why my mom forced my brother Carl to get a degree in graphic design, as well as his Bachelor of Fine Arts in drawing and painting. Because she wanted him to have a career, and he did work in that. Well, I mean, he worked in the shirt and tie section at JCPenney's for a while. Well. And then he did, like, get a communications or a gig with a communications company.
Yeah.
Hey. And then eventually when he went to California, he worked for NVIDIA for a long time, which if anybody knows, they're, like, microchips, and it's incredibly profitable company. And then he ended up doing what he wanted to do anyway, which is working in animation. So he got there in the end. But I don't think he maybe appreciated at the time that my mother was pushing this employability agenda.
It's like, oh, it's my art.
I know. I'll have to talk to him and see how he feels about it now that he's gained some wisdom and some perspective on the whole thing. But just Bobby goes to show once again, he's a smart cookie.
It's true, but I'm still chuckling thinking about you judging senior citizens' home.
I mean, if they'll give me a $180 honorarium to go do it for 3 hours, I'll do it. There aren't a lot of things I won't do for $180 for 3 hours.
For sure.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right.
Very good.
And?
Well, all right, let's go on to the mailbag. We have got some great stuff in the mailbag this week. Our question of the week last week was, what's the best road trip you've ever done? We got two voice memos this week, and both of them address road trips in some way. Let's put it that way. Let's start with Lindsay's voice memo.
Hey y'all, this is Lindsay. I'm calling from Montana, and wanted to say I really enjoyed the last episode with Jeremy filling us in on his and Elliot's recent trip. And I'm in the process of trying to plan a road trip with my son. He's 11. And so it was really helpful and inspiring to hear about all the amazing places that the two of you went. And as well as hearing about resources like camping and camping on public lands. And we'll definitely be doing a lot of that, and never been to the Southwest. So it just felt very apropos to hear you talk about that trip. And I also wanted to say that you're my favorite podcast. I've called in a couple times and sent a couple emails, but it's been a while. But like a lot of other people, I'm sure, are still out there and love every minute of the podcast every week. So really appreciate you guys keeping up on it and you being such a little spark of joy in my week for sure. And also wanted to tell Hillary that because of her, I got online and watched some clips of Michael Longfellow. This was a while ago, but on SNL, and he came to my town a couple weeks ago, and I went and saw him with my cousin, and it was just a super fun night of seeing some stand-up that I wouldn't normally have gone out and done. So that was super enjoyable, and it was a big surprise, but he was carried out onto this dinky little stage in the basement of this bar that they turned into a comedy club. And it's very rinky-dink feeling. And we were right up front, and he was carried out onto stage by Jason Momoa, who happened to be in town promoting some tequila, I think, that he is doing. So anyways, that was a giant shocker and really funny, unexpected contrast just because they're so, like, physically different. But Hillary might kind of get a kick out of that. And I know I have lots more I wanted to tell you guys, but just thanks for doing the podcast. And if any of you ever come to Montana, please mentioned on the show so I can try to get in touch with you, because I would definitely love to meet any of you in person one day and show you around town. Can't show you where I was baptized, but I can show you my dentist office and my elementary school. And definitely some spots where I like ran into a bank pole that one time. Okay, thanks again. Take care.
If I remember correctly, Lindsay's son, she sent us pictures before because he is a costume designer. That seems like a little bit formal, but like she sent us pictures of his Halloween costumes that he created for himself and for her. And they were pretty amazing for a 9 or 10 year old.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he's doing well, but I don't know. I kind of think that cross-country road trips with a child are going to be hellish.
I mean, I'm imagining my children, and it would be like vomit all over the place, and like how many snacks can we get, and I don't know. I don't have the lust for the road that some people do. I'm like, let's just fly. It's fine.
Yeah. 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 I think early 20s, we'll get to that with Amanda's voicemail, but early 20s are like a good age to do that sort of, because you have problem solving skills, but you still have enough energy.
Yes.
Bobby's going to do his Alaska misadventures coming up, so we'll see how that goes, Bobby.
There will be a lot of snacks.
We'll see how road tripping at late 30s goes for you.
I mean
mid-30s, you can still say mid-30s.
Yeah
right.
Well, 38 is, it's on the cusp, right?
When you say 30, when you're 39, you have to say late 30s, but you're okay.
I was having generational conversations with some of these kids today, and you know, I suppose I'm sort of an elder millennial, right? I suppose that's the term we're going with these days. But 86 is not even all that elder in the elder millennial range.
I was going to say, although, you're like in the like heart of the millennial. Like, yeah, you but are.
But I'm a Gen Xer, right?
At heart.
I mean, like, at heart.
Yes.
You're a greatest generation at heart.
I fought for you, art kids.
And Lindsay, we love you.
Yes, thank you.
We love you, too. Yeah. You are
the
sweetest. And I feel confident in saying if and when, I'm probably the closest of all of us to Montana, but if I get out to Montana, we'll have dinner. That'll be fun.
I want to go. I was talking about Montana today because I was like, Montana's become the place where in my office, all the rich guys take their families to like Crested Butte or wherever in Colorado in the summer, which is lovely, but you know, and it's a drive, but it's not, you can do it in 2 days. It's not that bad. But I feel like the new thing to do is to go to Montana for like 6 weeks. But I feel like it's because you have to like be rich to fly to Montana. Like, it's so hard to fly there.
Sure.
You know, directly or indirectly or whatever, and go to Big Sky. But that's the new like hot place to go. But I definitely want to go. I want to check it out. I've never been. It seems beautiful.
Does Helena have an international airport?
I think Bozeman maybe has one, but I don't know. Let's get Will on the horn. I bet it's like
Bozeman, Missoula. Yeah, but I can't see off of this if any of them are international.
I feel like if they're international, they go to like Calgary or something.
Probably.
The Billings Logan International Airport, I believe, is the second most important Logan airport in the country. Bozeman Yellowstone International Airport.
Oh.
The Great Falls International Airport. The Glacier Park International Airport. I wonder if we're using the term international pretty liberally. Like,
yes. Like FedEx. Like FedEx flies there.
Yeah. Rochester, New York's airport is an international airport because I think they once hopped a plane to Canada.
Well, good news. Find cheap flights to Montana from $79 on Kayak.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah, but you actually have to fly in a kayak.
I was going to say. Whoa, the turbulence.
All right. Well, let's move on to our other voice memo from Amanda. She has a whale of a road trip story for us.
Hey, Tishy friends. This is Amanda. I am not a big fan of road trips, but I thought I would call in and tell y'all about a road trip that was at least a memorable one that I went on when I was in college. Was a female friend of mine and a boyfriend of mine, and I decided to go see a concert at the Gorge, which is in central Washington. And we made it as far as just about Snoqualmie Pass before our car broke down, because we were driving my boyfriend's shitty car at the time. And of course, this was before cell phones, so we waited with the car, and he got out and started, you know, walking to try to find somewhere that he could use a phone to call a tow truck. And he found somewhere, I don't know, some business or ski station or somewhere. I can't even remember now where he found, but called a tow truck, walked back. We waited for the tow truck. The tow truck towed us to Cle Elum. Shout out to Ann Miner. And that's kind of in her neighborhood, I think. And we stayed the night at a motel there, and we were literally just watching TV, swear to God, no funny business, and the bed completely like fell apart and like crashed to the floor. And we were so scared of getting like charged extra that we just didn't say anything and just like checked out and left the next day without saying a word. So I'm sure that the people had lots to talk about the threesome that happened in the hotel room that night before. But we then caught another tow truck to tow the car the rest of the way into Ellensburg. And then we took a Greyhound bus to Spokane, borrowed his parents' car to drive back to the Gorge to see the concert, drove back to Spokane, I think. Can't remember exactly how we got back to Ellensburg. I think one of his parents drove us back to get our car, and then we made it eventually back to Seattle. It was a crazy, crazy trip. But one other detail I forgot was we did, on the Greyhound bus portion of it, leave a drunk guy outside of Ritzville at a gas station. I do remember that as well. So yeah, that was my memorable road trip in college. And I don't think I can ever top that one. See you guys. Bye.
Ah, youth.
I want to know
what did happen to that bed.
Yeah.
That it just spontaneously collapsed, Amanda.
Mm-hmm. Threesomes.
Maybe some aggressive bed jumping. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Sometimes I think wistfully and like going to Europe as a young person and exploring and not really caring where I'm staying and not really caring how I get there, you know, all that stuff. And then sometimes I'm happy that I have money to pay for like nice hotels and stuff and planes.
Cars that don't break down. And
Yep.
But Amanda's story reminded me just a little bit of my own road trip when I was a senior in college. We had a week between like the end of exams and graduation. So some of my friends and I decided to drive to the Tulip Festival in Pella, Iowa. Ooh. To see an a cappella group that was playing there. Yes, I was cool. The tickets were like $4.
I mean, listen.
So
that's how they get you.
Yep. We drove from Cleveland to Pella. It took about 10 hours. And when we got there, it was raining, that type of like driving rain. Yep. where we were sitting inside the van, like pondering our next move, and it felt like warm and clammy and gross and stuff. And it was an outdoor concert, by the way, BTW. So it got canceled. No, our $4 tickets. And now, you know, we're in a Dodge Caravan in Pella, Iowa. And we were like, so what do we do now? And we looked at a map because this was 1999. And I was like, well, if we go north, we get to my house in 5 hours. And they said, what's at your house? And I said, the Mall of America? And they said, let's go.
Yes.
So I called my mother from the payphone outside a Walmart in Ames, Iowa, maybe. And I was like, can we come stay the night? And we drove up to my parents' house and slept the night, went to the Mall of America, and then we drove overnight back to Cleveland, 13 hours in one shot.
Isn't that like extremely, I just heard this, I don't know this really, that it's like very Midwestern to be like, it's only 10 hours, it's fine. Like, we can do that drive.
It's short, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't know, it's fine.
I had a friend whose husband was from Omaha, and his like elderly parents would regularly drive from like outside of Omaha to Austin all the time. They were like, it's fine. It's like 13 hours. It's not that big of a deal. I'm like, what? That's a long time.
And a lot of the Midwest is so flat.
Yeah, but it's not.
It's kind of an easy, I mean, Indiana
is boring.
Is boring.
Yeah.
Is boring. Sorry, Indianans. But you know, we had to drive through there every time I went to school. And that was unfortunate because my dad would drive me to school every year, and my dad was not a fan of air conditioning in the car
because
he was so skinny. No. But the problem when you're driving east through Indiana, the sun was coming through my side of the car, so I was broiling, and my dad was in the shade and was fine. Oh, and
that's a nightmare.
It was not a democratic household. No. Let's put it that way.
He was the dictator.
Oh, yes. So I would, like, it's not an interesting trip, but it's easy. Like, South Dakota, oh, Jesus, God. We always say that if you stand on, like, the east or west border of South Dakota and you look towards the other end, if it wasn't for the curvature of the earth, you would be able to see the other border. It's so flat.
Someday I'll see it.
Yep. But Amanda, that's a pretty good road trip story, I will say. Yeah. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. That's probably a top 10.
Yeah, for sure.
I would say on unfortunate road trips. So thank you for sharing that. And let's go to the Facebook answers. We had some people tell us about their best road trips. Rosemary said, from Memphis to Austin for South by Southwest. I was also in my early 20s, which is the right age for a good road trip. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure.
Rosemary, when you have the bodily when you have the elasticity of body and energy that you can do those sorts of things. Jean says, 1970... Way to go, Gene. Take us back. Alan and I were teachers, so we took a 5-week Western trip. Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, etc. etc. Gene. What else is there? To California. Some on Old 66 and US 50. Then up the coast to San Fran and right turn east through Colorado Mountains back through Nebraska, Iowa to Ohio. Took in all the biggies, traveling in a little VW bug with all the camping gear, including cots, because I hated sleeping on the ground. Or, Gene, you come with two? In 1952, our family did road trip to Alaska, my parents and 6 kids camping all the way. I don't know. Alaska is something, something, Akan, whatever, highway. It's got to be Alaska. I don't know. Bobby, look this up. It was just 10 years old. I was just 10 years old and only opened. Oh, no, it was only 10 years old. Look at me reading on the fly and only open to public in 1948. Much of it was dusty and gravelly. I was only 7, but have many memories.
I'm Googling.
Thank you.
Alcan. Well, I don't know. The Alaska Highway, the Alcan Highway.
Oh, that's not an I, that's an L.
Yeah, Alcan, Alaska, Canada. Okay. That makes sense. I could see that.
Yeah. Sure. That makes sense to
me. Sure.
Man, imagine doing that when it was new.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's very cool. That's very cool, Gene. Kristen says, Highway 1 with Michael Livingston drying the scary van.
Oh, my God. We went on this road. Well, we flew when I was going into first grade, so my siblings were all like tweens, teens. And my dad, we flew to San Francisco, and then we rented up like a, not a minivan. It was like a, you know, one of those old school kind of, you know, mystery machine, you know, like from Scooby-Doo kind of vans. And we drove, my mom was like, let's drive down Highway 1, you know, when we stopped in wherever the Madonna Inn is. I'm blanking on like San Luis Obispo and like all that kind of stuff down
there. I don't remember.
Anyway.
That's beautiful though, that highway.
Gorgeous. But sorry, Dad. My dad's kind of a nervous driver. And so we're like, it's a 17-mile stretch or whatever. And he's like, God damn it, this is not 17 miles. How long have we been on this? And people are passing him left and right because he's probably going like 10 miles an hour. And he's like, God damn it, kids. And we're all like, nobody was wearing a seatbelt in the back. We're just like rolling around. Like he thinks we're going to fall off a cliff. But it was really fun. We made it to Los Angeles at some point. We had a great time. But yeah, my dad was a little petrified that whole time. We were all laughed at him. We're such assholes. We all were like, Dad.
Oh, poor Michael. Poor Michael.
All right. Morgan says, this past summer, I took my two teens from Portland, Oregon to Helena, Montana to visit an old friend, then driving about 5 to 6 hours a day onto Evansville, Indiana to visit family, including my 97-year-old grandma, then drove 2 more days to Bellows Falls, Vermont to visit another old friend. We then took the train to New York City for a few days, train back to Vermont, and then I drove all the way back to Portland in 4 days. Picture is from our last big stop on the way back. We went to the Badlands and had to stop at this gift shop / prairie dog place. That's a lot of driving, Morgan.
That's basically Portland to Portland. That's intense.
That's true. Only 4 days?
That's
from Vermont to Portland?
Yeah, that's a lot of driving.
And I would assume you're going through the Rockies for that. You're not going around the Rockies to do it in 4 days. So that's amazing. Lane says, it's not even close to my longest, but my best road trip has to be between through Chilean Patagonia along the Ruta Fin del Mundo, parenthetically, end of the world route. This is definitely not a road trip for everyone because you have to speak Spanish, even better, Chilean Spanish, since it's pretty unique, unless in a tour group, and the conditions are pretty rugged. Winds can get up to 100 kilometers an hour, and we saw Subarus, that's a dig at you, Meredith, Subarus and small trucks getting stuck in the rougher areas of Torres del Paine? My Spanish is non-existent, Lane. And almost got our huge four-wheel drive stuck at 1.2. You have to sign a waiver and watch a safety video to get into the park. That being said, it's the most beautiful part of the world I've ever seen, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. My dad loves to drive, so we always road trip for childhood vacations. The most epic ones were Wisconsin, north through International Falls, across Canada to Vancouver, down through Seattle and Portland and back, and Wisconsin to LA and back, where I got my first extensive interstate driving experience with my learner's permit. Yeah, no kidding. I've driven between Wisconsin and the Bay Area many times since then, but it was way more fun when I got to mostly nap and read instead of having to equally participate in the driving.
Yes.
True. So about the Chilean trip, that sounds amazing, but I'm not going on a trip where I have to sign a waiver and watch a safety video.
Yeah, no, that's...
I am not enough of a thrill seeker and I want to do that, but it sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that Lane experienced
that. Do you think you can just have another window open and then when it asks the question, just take the survey and it's really easy, like any work training?
Sure. It's a two-question quiz at the end.
Yeah. So when you're driving,
you can retake it.
Driving on the route at the end of the world and you find a USB drive laying on the side of the road.
What do you do? Yeah.
I stick it in my Spanish USB drive.
Jessica says, driving to Disneyland and camping at Honeyman State Park on the way. I don't know what Honeyman State Park is,
either.
But it sounds delicious.
Yes, it does.
Is that where one of, like, Yogi Bear's
exactly.
places? And finally, Jack says, from the locks to the keys and back again, we drove round trip 6,926 miles from Seattle near the Ballad Locks to Key West, Florida. Loved the roadside attractions. True Americana.
Oh my gosh. I'm looking at this picture of like, I want to see what the route is exactly. So yeah, he kind of just went through. Because when I did, when I went from Texas to San Francisco and then LA back to Texas, I only did like the I-10 route. But yeah, he kind of went through the Midwest-ish down through the South, not Southwest. That's interesting.
Yep. Jack really got the ground covered.
Yeah, he did.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, he did.
I'm looking, so, I'm trying good. To figure out who Jesse Honeyman is. That's who the state park is named after.
Ooh, Jesse Honeyman.
Jesse M. Honeyman Memorial State Park.
Is that Jesse SSE or SSIE?
SSIE.
Oh, so it's probably a woman.
I don't know. Are we allowed to name state parks after women?
That's why I'm surprised.
M. Honeyman. Kidding, of course. I have done cool stuff at plenty of parks named after ladies. Honeyman. Jesse M. Honeyman was a tireless advocate for Oregon's natural resources.
Oh.
So there you go. That makes sense.
Very good.
It does appear to be a, I mean, I'm going off one black and white picture, but a handsome woman.
Uh-oh. Handsome. As a woman, when you're called handsome.
That's like a red flag. That's like an Eleanor Roosevelt kind of.
Yep. She's got a jawline that makes me think I wouldn't fuck with her.
Well, all right. Thank you, everybody, for those road trip stories. They're very entertaining. They are. And it just makes me remember that I haven't gone anywhere or done anything in a long time.
I know. Should we go to Seattle this summer? Should we go? Should we have a T-sheet? Try M&M's in a park?
Maybe. But here's the thing. If we do go to Seattle this time, I want to go to Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
I want to do the little mini road trip.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been to Vancouver.
It's cool.
So I want to go and try the, whatever the food is you eat in Vancouver. Dumplings? No.
Well.
Whatever. There's some food you get in Vancouver.
I think Jeremy and I got poutine, but like. You can do that anywhere in Canada.
That's right. Not, yeah.
I'm sure.
You can get poutine a lot of places here.
Yeah. It's got to either be like the seafood or.
More Asian.
Right. Kind right. Of. Or Asian inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Help us out.
I want to do it. I want to go through the border.
Yeah.
I want to bring my passport.
Yes.
Smug in the knowledge that I'm an American citizen and I can get back in.
Wee-hee.
Let's do it.
So cool.
We could do a binational Tishy adventure.
That would be fun.
Yeah,
it would be really fun. Yeah. I love Canada.
We are Canada appreciators. All right, let's get into the meat of this thing.
Yes. All right. Yes. Okay. So, how when we're on Jambo, we're throwing out ideas. I obviously was not on last week due to lice infestation and other things. And
yeah, we didn't want it coming down the microphone.
Crawling into the wires. But I heard, you know, y'all discussing, Bobby was discussing his bottle service Bobby, that he was doing, and he has to wear a, you know, somewhat of a uniform of all black. And you're like, all black. And then Anne and Meredith were like, why is that weird? Like, that is, you know. What we wear. And I was like, yeah, it is weird. Black is my go-to. I wore an all-black outfit yesterday. It was like separates, and it was all black. I was like, this is great. I'm feeling really good about myself. It's like both slimming, but like it's, I don't know, it just looks like you don't have to second-guess it. It just all matches. Anyway, so I was like, oh, yeah, like style is something. It's sort of complex, and it's evolving, and sort of simple all the time. I don't know. So I was like, let's talk about our styles. Like, do you have style? Do you think you have style? Do you not care?
No.
Never have, never will.
Do you aspire to anything? You know, all that.
Conversation
kind of,
over.
And done.
She says no at the end.
No, bye.
Well, I mean, in terms of, I mean, there's a difference between style and fashion,
yes.
Right? Yeah. Because style is your own personal expression and fashion is sort of the expression of society at the moment or whatever. And as far as that goes, I have been uninterested in the idea of fashion and being on trend and any of that. Like, not even because I think that is dumb or that it looks stupid or anything. I just, like, it doesn't occur to me to even be interested in that. So, like, when you're not interested in fashion, then it becomes a little bit of a challenge to find a style, I would say. Sure. But we all do it, right? We're talking about our uniforms and whatever. So we've all found our personal style.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like, I think I like fashion, but, like, you know, obviously, like, certain limitations, either weight or boob size, like bra situation or height or whatever, kind of can limit you as far as, like, I like looking at fashion.
Just
I like
to be
judging.
Clear, all of those things are true for me, too. I want to just noted that that's universal.
Well, I like looking at fashion. You know, I like the Oscars. I like looking, but it's not, I've never been somebody who's like, oh, God, like, you know, see a model or something and think, and compare myself to that person and think, like, oh, I wish I could wear that. That's, I'm an admirer of it. But as I've grown older, it's evolving. And I will definitely look back at things from even 2 years ago. I'm like, why did I wear that? That was such, why did I like that so much? That's so odd for me. But I think it's, as I get older, I think I get simpler. I know that some people get, like, wackier as they get older. You know, they do, are more wild with patterns and stuff. I'm definitely leaning more into, I don't think patterns look that great on me. I like a sort of a simple, I mean, you know, we're going to get into it, but it's like, I like, it depends on how things fit is really what I'm going for. Like,
Hillary's getting ready to join the Red Hat Society.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh boy. And the pattern too depends. It depends on what kind of pattern we're talking about, but right. Like those of us who've got a little bit more going on in the figure department, the patterns get, like, stretched and draped kind of weird in a way.
Exactly.
Doesn't really work. You need those clothes hanger people to look real good in patterns.
Yes. Yeah, it's just – and to me, they kind of – you it can so easily date you to, as well. You know, it's sometimes – not that I'm a celebrity at all. I'm not, but, like – sometimes,
yes, you are. You're our celebrity.
Yes, I am. But sometimes I find myself conscious of this and I hate it where I'm like, well, I can't wear that again to whatever event because I know my picture is going to get taken and somebody's going to post a picture and they're going to see that I wore something like twice in the.
Oh my God.
But, like,
how
it's not,
dare you?
But it's not like.
A horror.
It's not like I'm real. Like, I've never thought that about anybody else. But I start getting into that. I'm like, well, I need to get something new. And I'm really trying to limit that. Anyway, we're getting off track. Okay. And let's talk about your early style because it made me laugh.
So I don't know about you guys, but my mom dressed me maybe too late in my life. Yeah. I think partly because, as I said, I didn't really have that much interest in it, and partly because she had the money. And I love my mom. Mommy, I love you very much. But fashion is, like, not your thing either. Mm-hmm. And as a result, as a child, I wore a lot of culottes, a lot of vests, a lot of, like, boxy blazers. Sometimes all of those together. I wore a lot of what 40-year-old women were wearing in 1988.
Well, to be fair, my friends and I talk about this a lot. Like, teen fashion... As it is, like, now, I feel like it really started in, like, 2000, because when I was a teen, or at least, like, a tween, like, Bridget's age-ish, the height of fashion where I grew up was a wrap skirt with, like, a hunting scene on it. Like, I can't, like, it's, like, not when I say a hunting scene, I mean, it would be, like, a tapestry.
Dead animals everywhere.
It would be, like, a tapestry, like, what you would see in, like, a rich person's home, like, dogs running in a field, kind of, you know, like
we're on the fox hunt.
Yes, exactly. Like we're like gentry or something, and like Cole Haan loafers and like a turtleneck ribbed sweater tucked in with your Dunenberg. Like that was like the height of like fanciness.
That is quite middle aged.
It
some
was
of that actually.
Everything was very middle aged. It was like, okay, we just like kind of dress like our moms, I guess. That was sort of the style. I remember when the Gap got really popular and I really wanted to, they had like navy blue jeans at the Gap like dyed navy blue. And I'm like, this is all I want. My mom was like, we cannot afford this right now. I'm like, that's all I want. And probably I couldn't even really fit into them. But yeah, I feel like dressing like moms was definitely a thing for sure back
but,
then.
But maybe this is getting too, too specific, too early in this conversation. But like the jean culture was really something else. Yes. Back in those days, and maybe it still is, and I'm just so like out of it, but of course I did not participate in any of it. But the rolling and the pegging of the jeans. Yep. Interesting how pegging has gone on to mean something different now. It was like, for a while it was like Gap, it was no, not Gap, it was Guess. Yes. That's what it was. It was Guess. Yes. It was Jerboe jeans. Mm-hmm. And they would have those little details. Mm-hmm. Down by the ankle, like the little crisscrosses with the bow,
you know,
at the bottom. Oof. It was all so ugly. It was just
so ugly.
Like, I just don't get it. I don't get any of that stuff. I think fashion looks stupid a lot of the time.
Well, and it gets just so dated so quickly. I did have on that faded California trip that my sister mentioned, my mom did buy me a pair of Guess jeans, or maybe I brought them with me, and I felt so chic. I was like 6 years old, and I was like, I'm hot shit right now. Like, check me out.
Guess had the sluttiest advertising campaign. Yes.
It was like, your jeans are sort of on and you're topless. That was basically it.
Like, this isn't exploitative at all. No. What are we selling here, guys?
Boobs.
Yeah. So anyway, that was me. Culottes and vests and a lot of shirts with shoulder pads.
Yes, of course. You have to. Bobby, what was your style?
Well, I thought it was funny that Anne said that her mom dressed her because she had the money. Well, my mom dressed me, but didn't have the money.
Ah.
And so as I wrote on the run sheet, I wore Goodwill chic.
Well, you know,
yes.
A lot of my clothes. And as a kid, I almost get it. Like, even if you have money, like, you're going to grow so damn fast.
Yes.
Yep.
That why bother investing, you know, much in anything?
You're going to be rolling around in the dirt. And
yeah, exactly. And I was definitely that kid. Sorry, I'm distracted because I got all these Guess jean ads up on my screen right now. And it's
so many boobs.
You know what? It's almost as bad as when I Googled rolling and pegging right before that. So, and it was I was smart enough to do it in an incognito window. So most of them came up blurred in safe mode. And I just left it there. Even after typing in the word jeans, still got Pornhub as one of the top five responses. So anyway, Goodwill chic. I wore just kind of whatever I could make the most out of at, you know, secondhand and thrift stores and stuff. And when I was a kid, Webster didn't have – had a Kmart, which is now long closed, of course. It got a Walmart midway through my childhood. Mm-hmm. And it didn't get a Target until I was in high school. So – you know, Kmart was it if it was going to be new clothes. And so you'd get, what is it? I think Arizona is the mm-hmm. Kmart brand.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
It would be Arizona brand jeans if I was lucky and they weren't used. Of course, as a boy in the, you know, early 90s, it would be the knees with holes in them, not because it's fashion, but just because I would ruin my jeans. Now,
but you were accidentally on trend.
Right, exactly. Now, when I blow out a pair of jeans, it's in the crotch, not the knees, which is because mm-hmm. I'm fat and not because I'm rolling around playing games. So, and then it was just, you know, t-shirts and like cheap or used, like plain solid color polo shirts, maybe the occasional rugby polo shirt because those were so, you know, secondhand in that era. But that was the most of it. And I just did not know how to dress. There are so many pictures of me, even up through senior year, of me in just like exactly like one big rugby stripe across a polo and some shitty looking jeans and a weird haircut or lack of a haircut. Or I would hunt around. So like I was a Boy Scout camp counselor for a couple of years in high school. So really too old to want to wear those clothes. But like I would wear my like camp staff t-shirt, which honestly I wish I had now.
I thought you were going to say you like wore your Weeblos uniform.
No, and I was never a Cub Scout, so I never had a Weeblos uniform. I never had the blue one. I had the yellow, the tan one, and I had a green one for staff. But no, I knew I didn't want to get beat up that much, so I didn't wear the uniform to school unnecessarily. But I would hunt around and just try to find like the weirdest t-shirts I could use, which again now is something that would be my fashion. Like now, sure. Anytime I'm in another town and I can get a t-shirt from like you know, some shitty bar in another city, I'll absolutely wear that all the time. My t-shirt style is that of Charlie Day in Sunny, always just wearing the most random like stores and like this mechanic shop or whatever. Now that's cool. Back then I wasn't doing it because it was cool. Back then it was just the best I could work with the limited stock I had. And yeah, that really, I think I had, by the time I got to high school, I think I had one suit that came from a thrift store. And even in college, but then when I got to college, it became more trendy to do that because I was hanging out with like the kids who worked at the radio station on campus.
And yeah, and they like, went thrifting on purpose.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. I was going thrifty out of necessity. They were going thrifting for style. So I was able to ease into that trend of being like a kind of grungy, dirty, alti kid, but it was because it was just my lifestyle, not because I wanted it. But that was it. Yeah. And there are not a lot of pictures from my childhood, which is probably for the best. But it was always like, if I went to church, I was putting a polo shirt on. But otherwise, it was just, you know, shitty t-shirts. And
I think that's sort of reasonable 80s/90s kid attire.
Well, and also like boy uniform as a kid, sure, is shorts and t-shirt, pants and t-shirt, right? So that's easy enough. I mean, what does Rory wear these days?
Shorts and a t-shirt. So occasionally he likes a little button down over his t-shirt. That's like his,
sure,
like being jazzy sort of. But yes, basically t-shirt and shorts.
I will say I did go through the short sleeve button down unbuttoned over the t-shirt,
of course,
look of the mid-90s and late-90s. So that was there. And then in high school I did have a Hawaiian shirt I wore on Fridays, but I was not the only one doing that. We had a little cadre of us, so it wasn't, I wasn't even trendsetter on that. I was following Mike Kozalski.
I forgot about the mid-90s like bowling shirt.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the trend that went, I'm shaking my hand with my other hand right now. It's the trend that went hand in hand with swing dancing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So like if you were going to see Brian Stetzer, you wanted to see him in a bowling shirt.
That sounded like Buddy or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Script.
I never did any swing dancing because just the idea of like a guy trying to flip me over his back and like getting crushed by my giant body.
I did it and I was scrawny and I still flip girls over my back. So.
Yeah, but did you flip any 6-footers, Bobby?
Only my dreams, Anne.
Meredith, what was your style?
Well, when I was really little, obviously my mom dressed me, but there was, I think when I turned about 3, as soon as I was old enough to get into my drawers, I was like, no, I'm doing it myself. And they would dress me and then I would change. I would go into my room and change. And there's a picture of me somewhere. I don't have it digitally, unfortunately, but I was wearing a like spaghetti strap, like undershirt, tank top kind of thing. I was wearing red shorts and I was wearing purple thigh highs.
Whoa.
Like knitted. Like, why did I have those for a child? Probably to go to church. Like,
yeah. Like little stockings.
Yeah.
It's Sunday. Get your purple thigh highs out.
Yeah. But I would wear them with shorts.
Can that be the show title?
Yes. So I've always been a little more independent. Like, I don't want to go with what my mom wanted me to wear. I wanted to wear what I wanted to wear. And I usually did. And I usually looked insane. I don't know. All through most of the 90s, when I was a little older, it was like humongous shorts and a tucked in humongous t-shirt, I feel like.
Aha! You too rode the culottes train. Yes.
And my mom sewed a lot of clothes for us. So it was like usually, you know, she would make my sister and I the same thing, but a different pattern, but like in the family. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
So like I was wearing a pink flower print dress, and she was wearing a blue flower print dress or whatever.
Yeah.
From the same, you know, rack at Joann's Fabrics. So there was a lot of that as well, but pretty standard, like, whatever girl uniform in the 90s. And then when, kind of along the same lines as Bobby, I would definitely go to thrift stores, in the later 90s and get like gigantic old man pants that I wore with my little wallet chain.
Yes.
Cool. I would like sew my own purses. They all looked horrible and disgusting and terrible. I don't know how to sew. So that was fun.
That didn't stop you.
No, it sure didn't. And, you know, I think I'm really glad, I'm jumping ahead, but I'm really glad that like wide leg pants are back in style, because that's a much better look on me than skinny jeans. As I don't know, just me and skinny jeans need to break
part
up,
part ways.
Yeah. So that kind of whole era of wearing like I would always wear like a tight top and baggy pants.
Yeah.
Like that's what I wore all through the late 90s and early 2000s. Nonstop. And in college I dated a guy who worked at Abercrombie, so I all Abercrombie'd out. I couldn't afford it, but I didn't need to, because he would like steal stuff off of mannequins that they weren't selling and give it to me. So I had like this awesome scarf that I loved.
Was it like a little thin scarf?
Yes, of course it was. It was extremely long and extremely thin and like multicolored stripes, and I thought it was so cool, and he snagged it off a mannequin even though you couldn't actually buy it in the store. So there's
you were
a couple
cool.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. Just all this stolen expensive clothing.
The best I could do was stealing pizza and chicken wings and coffee from my employer in high school.
Yeah.
Getting Abercrombie.
I stole plenty of food from the restaurant I worked at.
That's true.
Yeah.
So that was kind of passage. Yeah, that was kind of my childhood fashion in a nutshell. I'll try to find a good picture though.
I'll be quick because I've already talked about it. My mom is definitely pretty, I would say she's pretty fashionable, and she always dressed us pretty fashionable. And, you know, depending on how many kids were in college at a time, like it was dictated like where we shopped. Sometimes it was JCPenney. Sometimes it was whatever, the Gap or Neiman's or whatever. But when I sat on the run sheet, I was somewhat of a trend chaser. I don't really mean that. Like it wasn't, you know, I would like dip my toe into whatever was trendy, like whether it be a low rise jean or, you know, truly something from Contempo Casuals, which I did love. But once I got into like teen time, yeah, jeans were never, I like jeans now more than I did back then. Jeans were never really something that ever looked good on me. They were always too long. They would be like, you know, dragging on the ground because I have short legs.
God, what's that like?
I know we have the opposite experiences in this, because yes, it's like all of my jeans would be like dirty on the bottoms because they're just whatever. But I have always liked dresses. That was always the thing that I just tended to do. It's just easier and it fits me better. It looks, I don't know, better on me. But yeah, there, I look back at some pictures of me trying stuff back in, you know, middle school, high school, and it's like, girly, even in college, like, just, I'm reminded of this because I'm semi rewatching Sex and the City because it's on Netflix, and I'm like, it's like, you know, it's like, it's like looking at old pictures. Like, I've seen it so many times that it's like, I can fully play Candy Crush and not pay attention because I know what's going to happen. But all of these late 90s, early 2000s fashions, when she's wearing like a tube top, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker weighs like a, you know, a buck. Like she's like so tiny. She can wear a tube top. That's fine. I have definitely, when I was in London, bought like a Patagonia tube top. Now, listen. Several things.
Two words I never thought I'd hear together.
Yeah, like it was more like fleece. It wasn't Patagonia. I remember it was from Club Monaco.
A fleece tube top?
Yes.
It what? Was from.
I need to find a picture of it. No idea. London, I guess. Because then I had like a little fleecy, like camel colored fleece jacket that went over it. I thought I was so chic. I was like, this is it. Not to talk about bodies too much, but my boobs are pretty big. I have no business wearing a tube top. There is I should not be wearing that. And
You're walking a dangerous path.
Yes.
Anytime you do that.
And I'm short. So then like my boobs make up, especially an unsupported boob makes up half of my torso at that point. Cause it's just, there's gravity is just dragging it down. But yeah, I thought I looked pretty cool. So sometimes what I fear is that I'm trying to be a little bit more, you know, general about my fashion now, not be like super duper trendy, maybe here and there, because I often just look back at pictures, even like from a few, like I said, from a few years ago, and I'll be like, what the fuck was I wearing? Why was I wearing that? So now I'm really going with a uniform, like, and this gets us into our current style, which I'll just kind of go into it. I really do a lot of basics, a lot of black with a little bit of flair. Like, I'm a little bit psychotic because I do go into the office every day for the most part. And this is how just my brain works. And it is not a judgment on literally anybody. It's just how my brain works. At the beginning of the week, I look at the weather. And at this point now, it's getting to the point where it's like, it's hard because it's so hot outside, but it's freezing in the office. So it's like, okay, what am I going to wear today? Much like I said, and when I think, oh, somebody's going to take a picture of me and they'll put it on Facebook or Instagram and people are going to see I was wearing something, I repeated an outfit. I don't repeat outfits 2 weeks in a row. I don't know why. That doesn't mean like I'm not going to wear the same jeans. Like, I'll wear a pair of jeans 2 weeks in a row. I just won't pair it with the same top. Because I like to mix it up. I don't know why. It's just something I do. But I would say most of my stuff is pretty basic. It's like, you know, lots of blacks, a fair amount of jeans, a fair amount of dresses. A coworker I work with who I adore, Tracy, I love you. I know you're not really listening. And she pointed out that I have a lot of polka dots. Like, polka dots are apparently are my neutral. I have so many black and white polka dot dresses, and I have to catch myself being like, I'm like, oh, that's so cute, and be like, no, you don't need any more polka dots because people are starting to notice. But anyway, I would say on the weekends, I mean, since I do where I my office is, you know, it's like business casual. I mean, it kind of irritates me because I would say the women dress up more and the men are often in golf wear. But I do like looking nice for work. It is something that I feel like I'm in a better mood if I feel like I look, I don't know, kind of cute or whatever. But on the weekends, unless I'm going out to dinner or something, I'm almost always in workout clothes. Like, I'm almost always in some sort of leggings. But I don't think about it. I have been investing more in my sports gear lately, but yeah, it's not anything like fashion forward or anything like that. But yeah, that's basically it. Black and, I don't know, aloe yoga. Meredith?
Yeah, kind of, well, not too similar, but since I work from home, my work wardrobe has dwindled down to nothing. And when I went to DC, I was like, oh no, I have
nothing. Oh, is that when you went to your Nordstrom trip?
Yes.
You're like, help me.
Yep, I have nothing. Because I've kind of purged that all out of my wardrobe, because even if I was to wear it, it would be way out of style. And I'm slightly concerned about that. I'm not overly concerned, yeah, but like, I don't want to look too dated, I guess, at a work thing. So I got a couple new things for that. But on the daily, I'm wearing pajamas all day, because comfort is the main priority. And then workout gear the rest of the time. If I need to go out somewhere, I will still just, like, I have a pair of black Spanx leggings that I love.
Those are good.
Yeah, they are. So I'll wear those and like a cute top.
Yes.
Of course, it's got to be
a going out top.
A going out top. Yeah. I have a couple, pairs of, boyfriend jeans that I really like. I've tried to veer into like cropped wide leg corduroys, but they just make me look crazy. Like, I just don't. I have a pair from Madewell and I'm like, I spent too much on these to throw them away, but I'm never going to wear them.
So. I mean, cropped are like normal on me. Like, they're like a normal. I'm like, this is great. Everything is my length now because everything's cropped.
Yeah, I have to get talls usually, not all the time. But if I was to choose one store that I would shop at forever, it would probably be Athleta, because they have workout gear, yeah. they have tall sizes, and they have like streetwear too.
They have cute little dresses, like workout yeah, they dresses, do. But you can kind of like transition to regular clothes.
Yeah. So I have some nice stuff, but I hardly ever touch it. So it's like my pajama compartment in my closet is chock full, and I need to stop buying. I really need to stop buying those things. But like every time I go to Target, I'm like, ooh, shorts with pockets. Here we go. So yep. most of that stuff comes from Target, and the rest of it comes from Athleta.
Yep.
That's about it.
Bobby. So I have a few levels of uniform now, because I actually go into the office fairly often, but my world's pretty casual most of the time. Like, if I ever get a job at the Boston Symphony, I'll have to wear a suit every day at work, basically. And it's one of the reasons why I don't want that job. But, today was khakis, a button-down shirt tucked in, and that one aforementioned item I found at a Banana Republic outlet. I think it was the one in Wrentham that's like a heavy shirt jacket, blue with brown patches on the elbows and a little bit of stylized edging, which makes me feel smart and stylish. And it's one of the few things I have that does that. But most days it's either some sort of cheap brand of jeans and a lot of khakis from, or pants of different colors from, I'm literally looking at a pair now because I'm slipping on the brand suddenly. Duluth Trading Company.
Oh yeah,
they're an excellent brand for the husky middle-aged man. It's pretty much, you know, they've got my sizes in stock and I can order them online easily. Okay. Before discovering Duluth a couple years ago, it was basically just going to JCPenney and looking for clothes that fit. Yeah. And similarly with shoes, because I'm a size 13 wide men's shoe. Sneakers was never about like what kind of shoes I wanted. It was about finding a pair that fit. And so growing up, it was like Payless or whatever. Now as an adult, and Skechers in high school, not because I was a skater kid, but because they are naturally wider shoes.
Yeah. That's why Rory likes Skechers, because he has like Flintstone feet. So yeah. it works for his.
I can appreciate that. I wear sneakers most days. And it's funny, I wear Asics now. And I literally for a while had two pairs of Asics that were exactly the same, just different colors, so that I could remember which was my like walking around pair and which pair was my gym pair. But they were the same shoes. And I've just rotated them like tires. The everyday shoes wore out, so I've swapped into the gym ones, which for obvious reasons have not worn out because I don't go very often. And I need to order another pair to back up for the gym shoes. You'd think it'd be the other way around. But, I don't have any major meetings today. Uniform is, if it's, 60 degrees or under, either a plaid button-down shirt, untucked, and a pair of jeans and sneakers with a t-shirt on underneath. If it's over that, it might be a polo shirt, which I don't love polo shirts. Like, I hate the golf ones. Like, men's polo shirts come in a couple of different styles. There's usually some sort of cheap, thin cotton, like Hanes brand ones. And then there's, like, the stretchy, shiny golf polos, which I hate because they remind me of the kind of guys who work in Hillary's office.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I usually try to find some with just a little bit of style touches or just a little bit of just a little something, but not a lot of something. Still cheap. I'm usually like bargain hunting on Amazon and there are all these weird brands. The names are just a random mashing of letters that don't like never heard of before and I'll never hear of again. And I hate brand marketing on clothes. Ooh, so like, yeah. I don't want a polo shirt that has like
a giant.
Yeah, even like the Brooks Brothers logo on it, or
I'm not paying to advertise.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Like when I was a huskier younger man who couldn't find a lot of clothes to wear, like Tommy Hilfiger clothes fit me really well, but I don't want to wear a giant Tommy Hilfiger flag on my shirt.
Yeah,
and even like Banana, like I like a lot of the Banana Republic style for men, but none of it fits me.
Like, well, no. Banana Republic runs small.
Really small.
Yeah,
really
the 2X, small. that Banana Republic might have been the impetus of me and Mike joking about 2XL Slim Fit all those years ago, because all of the 2X clothes there, I put them on and they're big enough in the shoulders, but there's like a foot of space trying to button them in the front. I only get lucky at Banana if it's something like a, like the shirt sweater, or like a, like maybe a polo shirt, or like a big, what's designed to be like a big oversized sweater that just fits me like a normal sweater.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And I put a couple of notes here. One of them is in my stray thoughts. Like, I tried Stitch Fix a few years ago and I got a couple of things that I really liked and kept, but even with my measurements, they would send me stuff and half of it just would not fit.
Yeah. Mm. Well, so, fits are like, especially for women, unfortunately, but fits, I don't know what the fit models are. It varies per brand so widely.
And they, you know, it would be like the largest one they could send from that. And I'm like, I am a fat guy. This is not a secret, but like, I'm not
fat guy in a little coat.
I have experienced that. Okay. We were at Rentham at the Outlet Mall a couple of weeks ago. We went for a walk around and there used to be a Van Heusen outlet, which is like a wonderful place to go get cheap button-down shirts that I'm going to wear under a sweater or a suit anyway, so it doesn't matter. And it has been flipped. That mall's kind of going downhill. It's no longer that. It's like some Italian brand, that some knockoff Italian brand. And I walked in there just to see what was going on. And the guy just looked at me and he was like, just so you know, all the sizes are in European here. So do you know your European size?
Oh, yes.
And I was kind of only half heard him. And I was like, yeah, no problem. And I picked up one sport coat, went to put it on. Probably would have split it in the back if I wasn't careful. It was so small, even though it said it was like a 54 or something, which is big and is, you know, kind of around my size, 52, 54. And I took it off and the guy's just staring at me. Mm. And I look at the price tag and it's a couple hundred bucks. And I was just like, I'm leaving now. And I just put it back on the rack and just walked out of the store. Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you even doing? I mean, even at, you know, places like the Banana Outlet, like I know I'm just buzzing straight to the clearance rack, to the end of the clearance rack to see what they have.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand. It's like they think bigger people don't wear clothes.
It's so crazy.
What kind of sales are you missing?
Right. Well, and also I'm sort of in the uncanny valley of sizes, because if I go to somewhere that's, you know, like if I go to Men's Warehouse and I'm not trying to like the way I look, I guarantee it off, you know, the rack, you know, if they're measuring me, it's fine, whatever. But like, off the rack, everything's a little too small. But if I go to DXL, which is the fat man version of Men's Warehouse, nothing is small enough for me. Everything swims on me. It's like, oh, well, here's a pair of 6X khaki shorts, which I don't want khaki shorts in the first place. I'm right in this sliver of land, this no man's land between skinny, well, normal people's clothes as they make them, and like you have been classified as, you know, plus size. And so that's actually really tough. Dressing up, I have some like cheap off the rack suits, a couple hundred bucks a piece from JCPenney. The suits I got married, I bought two suits when we got married, which now no longer fit because I've gained some weight since we got married. You know, happy husband, obviously. But I wore those for years and they were like the only two suits I ever had that fit really well because they were fit, you know, measured to fit. But just a couple of months ago, I went and got an Indochino suit.
Ooh.
And this is not a plug. I don't have a promo code. I wish that if somebody hears this and Indochino wants me to be a sponsor, you know, sponsor the podcast, I'll happily do it. I went in, I had them measure me. I picked all the little things, all the little details, picked the lining color, picked the suit color, added the ticket pocket because I like that. It fits so well. It's the only suit I want to wear now.
You know, they have a
ringing endorsement.
They have a storefront near my office, and I keep, because they have some women's. I don't really have a need for a suit, but I'm like, ooh, those look kind of sleek, actually. Like, if I could get it fitted to myself.
A lot of the models, both the men and the women in their advertising, do the thing where like they're not wearing a shirt underneath.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the women's suits look. You know, this is not a Hillary Clinton pantsuit. Like,
no,
they really,
no.
Yeah. No. So that's my top tier right now is like I'll wear this suit. That's my ideal suit. Like the worst part is I know if I have to wear a suit a few days in a row, like we had a big festival a couple weekends ago and I needed to wear two suits in a row. One day I'm going to have to wear a different suit. So like the opposite of you rotating your clothes. I, I do try to make sure I don't wear the same flannel shirt twice in the same week. Yeah. So, like, if it gets a little colder, like, you know, mid-fall to early spring, I'm just in heavier flannel shirts and jeans all winter. And I've also become a hat guy. Like, I wasn't a hat guy growing up. I became a hat guy at some point in college. And so if I don't have meetings, I'll take a...
That fedora looks so good.
Oh, my God. I think I was only very briefly the fedora kid. Oh, and that was at the point in the 90s where it was not unacceptable. It was bad, and I don't want to relive it. But, you know, every friend group...
We're all searching. We're searching.
Every friend group needed that one kid. I think most of the pictures are going to be from not go back that far. Oh, God, childhood. This is why I've never been to a high school reunion, by the way. and I do own a couple of tuxedos, for what it's worth, but I don't think they fit me anymore. And in fact, I'd love an Indochino one. So
sponsor us.
The Indochino suit ended up being like in the neighborhood of $500 to $600. Like, it's not a lot of money for nice clothes.
Custom fit. Yeah. Suit
feels like a lot of money to me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to know anything about where that suit is made or how small the hands you stitched it were, because
we'll get to that.
It's coming in a box from China, or not even China anymore, I'm sure, some other country. And you just don't ask a lot of questions. Anyway, that is that's my, and then of course when I'm doing the BA work, it's black pants from Duluth and a black button down shirt or a black polo. So that was my all black gripe.
On that note, Anne.
Oh yeah, I wrote black and stretchy. That's what I want. There was some point in my life a few years ago when I was like, why am I wearing anything with a zipper or a button? Well, or like, no.
It's comfy.
It's leggings all day, every day here. I buy them from Long Tall Sally. They're not, it's not athletic wear. It's just cotton leggings or whatever. And I'm with Meredith, PJs all day. I'm wearing a t-shirt and a flannel from L.L. Bean. Maybe right now, t-shirt flannel all day, all the time. And then workout clothes when I am working out, I'm going to the gym, and that's basically it. And honest to God, I have almost no clothing that's fit for that. Like, I have a few shirts that are solid color block, cover my ass literally. And I have another pairs of leggings, and that's what I wear. Oh, and I have a couple of cardigans, like long, black, drapey, stretchy cardigans from Eddie Bauer that are just amazing. I love those things so much. And they go on over the top of everything when I leave the house.
Yep. I have two notes. The first is on the longer shirts.
Yep.
I also do that. I mean, if I'm tucking in a button-down shirt, there's nothing I can do about that. But if I am wearing a tucked-in shirt, I desperately want either a sport coat or a sweater or something, because I feel thoroughly uncomfortable if I can feel the small of my back exposed, like if an undershirt pulls up or something. And I know this is just a fashion thing that has passed me by, but like, guys all the time are just wearing shorts or jeans and whatever, and you can see the top of their boxers and they don't care at all. I am completely weirded out at the thought of the littlest bit of the top of my very boring, unbranded boxer briefs that don't mean anything and are just more clothes. It's funny. I was just telling someone earlier, I have very few hangups about the human body. Like, I really wouldn't care too much. Like, I just don't. Like, I'm relatively unfazed. But at the same time, for whatever reason, there's that feeling of a little bit of air exposed on my back if I, like, bend over the wrong way and my shirt comes untucked. That is completely unnerving to me. And it's not even it's not like a scandalous thing. Like, oh my God, my body is hanging out. It's just like this. No, your clothes are supposed to cover you there. Damn it. I don't like it. And I'm being very specific here because it's not about women. Like, I, you know, there was an era of growing up when underwear hanging out of the back of women's outfit was more common and really gross. I'm not even talking about that. Although that is its own thing. I'm talking about men.
That thong.
Right, exactly. Yay. And it's like, no, it's shorts sitting lower than underwear. And I don't even just mean the guys who are wearing their shorts, you know, halfway around down their ass and all that. But like, It just weirds me out. I was like, no, your pants are supposed to sit around your waist. Your underwear is supposed to be under your pants. Like, just so logical. Anyway,
I just don't get the physics of the men who wear their pants down that low.
You guys don't
have hips like women do. What's keeping them from just sliding down around your ankles?
It happens all the time.
It was all that, and I had a whole nother thing. Oh, the pajamas thing. I guess maybe it's just a luxury. It's like, I don't really have pajamas. I have one pair of like blue pants and button-up front shirt pajamas that I bought kind of as a joke, but they're comfortable, so I do wear them sometimes.
Do you wear them with a stripy hat holding your candle?
Exactly. When I go to get my sleepy time tea. Mm-hmm. I like gym shorts and a t-shirt. Like, the t-shirts that are a little too ratty or soft to, like, wear out in the world, I just... Like, right now, I'm wearing, sweatpants and a red t-shirt because I was wearing a red button-down red and white check button-down shirt, so it just was on.
We're talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Here. Yeah. When I say pajamas, I don't mean that I'm wearing like a little negligee set or anything.
I mean,
it's the things that I sleep in are what's classed as pajamas. Yeah. Yes.
Well, like, Sam has like a whole rotation of like pajama pants and pajama matching sets.
No.
I did buy most of them.
No.
But
I'm talking about like soft cotton shorts and a tank top.
Okay. All right, because I just sleep in boxers and a t-shirt.
I'm a nightgown kind of gal, but not like a negligee nightgown. Like
a nightgown gets all tangled up. I can't handle it.
I don't know why. You know, it just is.
Layers in bed like that. Yeah, I can't wear like long pants in bed because I'll
get too hot.
Well, I mean, here's your scandal alert. I mean, we're almost 2 hours in here, but like, I slept naked until like a couple of years ago. I just could not wear clothes. I also get really warm in bed, like I'm a really hot sleeper, and so I just could not have all those extra layers on. I have regulated that a little bit more now, so now I do wear some clothes to bed most of the time, but
I've never been able to sleep naked. It makes me feel too...
Like exposed.
Exposed, yeah. Insecure. Like, what if I have to get up in the middle of the night? Like, what? I don't know.
I can sleep naked, no problem.
Well, I guess some of that is...
I do have that thought every once in a while. Like, what if there's a fire? Right. Like, what's my order of operations?
I guess you can keep a bathrobe near the door. Right next to the baseball bat behind the door, there's a bathrobe.
Anyway. And what are your pet peeves?
Oh, well, I've got some of the same ones as Meredith, but since she wrote them down, I'll let her bring those up. But my particular pet peeve has been for a long time stores that think that fat women want to dress like a clown that threw up.
That's so true.
Yeah.
There, so true. If you go past the Lane Bryant, there will be these tops, and they'll be like orange and turquoise and black, like swirly abstract patterns. And I'm like, who wears these? I'm a larger person, but I'd like to wear something that looks normal. Yes. Like, I don't have a different fashion sense because I have a bigger body. What's the deal with these clothes?
It's so true. I saw, I don't know, it was a TikTok or something where the girl was trying it, and it was like cold shoulder or you look like Mother of the Bride or, mm-hmm. you know, it was like there's just nothing that is... Or you're just like odd, like, or you look like a receptionist at like a dentist office or whatever. It was like all of these either matronly or too like I'm wild. Like I don't care what's going on. You know, it just is.
I was just about to say you've been shopping in the matron section again, haven't you?
Well, not to make a reference twice in one show, but boy, I bet you can't wait until you can join the red hats kind of stuff.
It's not much better in menswear for plus size. If you go to like any like generic, first of all, if you find a department store that has plus size men's clothes, because a lot of them don't, like you go to Macy's or something and they will have plus size women's clothes. And if you go into the menswear section, it's almost always, oh, just order it online.
Yeah.
Like they just do not even have it. And if you go like to a JCPenney's, which will have it, they're all just 6XL polo shirts that will go down to my knees. Or, yeah, it's quite, the challenge is quite similar. Like, apparently fat guys don't wear, or even really tall guys for that matter, don't wear like a button-down shirt and khakis or something. Like, they're all just a little ridiculous. It's like a lot of basketball clothes. Oh, tall mm-hmm. people shopping here must like basketball. Like, well, I do like it a little bit. I don't play it. Yeah. And in big and tall land for men, there's definitely big and tall, And so you have to be really careful because they'll have tall, but they won't have big. Or they'll have big and tall, but not just big.
Yeah. You know, the tall offerings have gotten a lot better. Although the internet has been, how did tall people do it before the internet, right? Totally. But the amount of times that I would, back in my thinner days, when I would be at New York and Company, and there's like a whole rack of tall size 2 pants. And I'm like, who are these people?
I never met them.
Taller bodies usually mean bigger bodies, not like disproportionate bodies.
That used to be my work wardrobe.
Yeah, I used them for a long time, but can't fit in them anymore. But I don't know. I'm like, all the 16s are gone, but there's 2s and 4s galore. And I'm like, who's buying this?
I don't know.
That's why they're still in stock.
That's because why they're there. Yeah.
True. Yeah. And I was going to say, maybe it's like, you know, the teenagers where the girls have sprouted up but not out yet, but they don't shop at New York and Company. I always wondered, I would see those teenage girls go past with the pants that are like painted on, not a judgment, but just the pants are so tight. And I would think, how can that be comfortable to wear? And then what happened was I lost a lot of weight. And I'm like, oh, when you're skinny, that stuff doesn't actually feel uncomfortable.
It's not like colonizing you. It's like, you're like, oh, this actually, it feels fine.
Yeah. Because you don't have anything bulging out.
Yeah.
So good for them. I mean, I hope it remains that way for them, but it's probably not going to. Yeah. And you're in for a rude awakening like the rest of us. Mm-hmm.
Bobby, any pet peeves?
Well, growing up, I don't remember who told me this or when, but I literally only learned one style rule. And it doesn't really apply to casual daily dress, but anytime I have to go business casual or higher, the only rule I've ever known that I've ever followed, and I follow it religiously, is that my pants have to match, or my belt has to match my shoes. I literally own 2 pairs of, I guess, what we'll call dress shoes, right? Leather shoes. A lot of guys wear shoes like that every day, even with jeans. I just wear sneakers because they're more comfortable and because I got giant fucking feet and I need the arch support. But like, I usually have in my rotation 1 pair of brown leather shoes and 1 pair of black leather shoes, but I will be damned if I leave the house with a black belt and brown shoes on or vice versa. And so for some reason, that is the one thing that I'll notice on other guys, like, oh, as if it matters anymore.
No, they're both neutrals.
Yeah. And it used to be like, oh, well, you don't mix, you know, certain colors with certain other colors. And now nobody cares about that stuff that much anymore. But yeah, black and brown. I'm very careful about it. I don't know why to this day, but I'm just very fixated on it.
Well, we'll see. I did have to kind of get past that a little bit because, again, with the black leggings. And then I had a pair of like brown knee-high boots. And I was like, can I do this? Are we allowed to do this? Yeah. Can I? And then I was like, fuck it, I don't do it.
Well, what other leggings are you going to wear? Like,
exactly.
It'd be weird. I got, well, you can borrow Meredith's purple ones.
You can have my thigh highs. Yeah.
But purple and brown is not much better. So, you know, anyway. Oh, I didn't mention this. I already mentioned that I was too fat for Stitch Fix. I have discovered that I can order online extra long ties. Which was really, really helpful because, you know, necktie, I want to have the go down to just above the belt or touch the belt. And regular ties, and it's not even so much because I'm so fat, but it's the related, which is that I have a very large neck. And so
it's taking up a lot of real estate up top.
Yeah, like I would tie the tie so short in the back to make the front long enough that it wouldn't, you know, neckties have like a loop on the back of them. You can put the back part through so it doesn't fly off and, you know, Dilbert, basically. And the back would always be too short. So I was always looking for, like, discreet ways to, like, either tuck it into the shirt or attach it to the back of the tie. But I don't want to wear a tie bar or a tie pin because that's not my style.
Yes.
And so I finally just realized, and they're not expensive, and I don't care if my ties are nice or not. I'm only wearing them symbolic. Like, what the fuck do you need a tie for anyway? But I found like extra long ties, and the only thing I don't like about buying them is they make me feel a little like Donald Trump. But I'm not tripping over it when I'm done with it, so it's not quite as long as his. But just you know, as another fat guy wearing a tie like Donald Trump, I kind of.
What are you talking about? He's the epitome,
the perfect physical specimen.
He's the most healthy man alive.
Yeah, he's so healthy that he's falling asleep and ripping ass in court every day, and nothing makes me happier. But, anyway, yep. So there you go. Those are my pet peeves.
Meredith.
Sorry, I was looking at the kittens. They're all under my desk right now.
Oh, little babies.
They've all relocated.
Have we found out their gender yet?
No,
I mean, their gender
early.
Is
they
their own
just,
expression. But...
They all look the same. I can't tell.
God, how long is this going to take?
A while.
Like, for the little ding-dong pops out.
Like 6 weeks or something, and they're 3.5, so it'll be some time.
And it's not like one of those turkey thermometers. Just, you know, one day it's just...
Just
it's
boing.
Done. Boing.
He's cooked.
We'll have to wait until they get to the vet, I think, unfortunately. I have a couple... And one, I don't want to offend anybody. Like, if you enjoy these, then enjoy them. But for me, cold shoulder tops had to go in the trash. Yeah. After, like, a year, I feel like they were really cool for a minute. And now I just can't stand them.
Yep.
Not into that. But my big thing is everything has got to be a crop top right now. And mm-hmm. I am not confident enough to wear a crop top. Like, I have a few, and every time I wear them, I'm like, I better put a sweatshirt on over this.
Yes.
Like, I need a cardigan, I need a wrap, I need something else, because I just am super uncomfortable in those. And speaking of Athleta, like, I feel like more than half of their tops are crop tops now, and I'm just not doing that when I'm at the gym. There's no way.
I typically do wear a crop top at the gym, but if I'm going out into the world afterwards, I'm like, I'm not, this is for the gym only. This is for gym eyes only. This is
Well,
not
you're more
for,
confident than me. Well, I feel like you can pull it off.
but even like in the world though, I feel like not even just workout, which is whatever. It's like everything is a crop top. Like everything is a crop top. Even
it
plus
seems
size,
like
it's a crop
top.
Yeah,
like the going out style for the young beautiful things these days seems to be a crop top and then like a high-waisted pant and a really chunky shoe.
Yes for sure. Yeah, I mean, kind of Meredith, on top of that, when I was shopping, I told y'all this, when I was shopping for my desert wedding, not my desert wedding, but the desert wedding I went to, everything was either Mormon, like a Little House on the Prairie, or it was like Club MTV in 1992. Like there was no, and maybe this is just like our age also, where it's like, well, I am not ready to be a meemaw quite yet, and I'm not like a trad wife, but like I'm also, I want to be a little bit more covered. Like it's fine. Like I'm not like ashamed of my body, but like I need to be.
I am too.
Well, but I also want to be like professional, or I don't take it seriously or whatever. Just like I don't want to expose everything all the time. I personally like wear, I don't love this term, but like wear a lot of like bodycon, just because the only small part of my body is my waist. So I'm like, if I'm not showing that, then it looks kind of like I look like a meemaw a little bit. But I also don't need everything to be like so skin tight or so revealing. Or like backless or whatever. That's that is.
Yeah. How do you wear a bra with a shirt?
No idea. I mean,
it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense. I don't.
A lot of tape.
Yeah. And I don't have the patience for
or
that.
Or you just don't.
Yeah.
Or you just don't.
Because your boobs are high and small. Yeah.
Someone who spent the afternoon around a bunch of art students. I can tell you that
don't.
The answer
you
is
just
that
don't.
You don't.
See, yeah. I don't have the confidence to do that either. And I don't really need a bra except. Why am I feeling like this is TMI? I need nip control.
Yeah,
I'm saying. Like, that's the only reason I wear a bra is because I'm self-conscious about them. Not because I'm ashamed, but because it draws too much attention. It's like, it's like too revealing and it makes me uncomfortable and it's not worth me worrying about it all day long when I'm out. Otherwise, I would just never wear one.
Yeah.
I had an employee in Albany at one point. Young, very fashion-forward designer, actually, on our team. And she would wear a lot of clothes. I think she made some of them. They were always kind of trendy and always tasteful, but also leaving a lot exposed. And I don't think she wore a bra once. And in the entire time she worked for us. And similarly, like, it was sort of just a distraction because she would be at the front desk and I would watch people walk in and just sort of gawk.
Well, it's so funny because it's like annoying because you have to sort of present your, even if you're dressed professionally as a woman, sometimes you're like, I have to be aware of how I'm making other people feel, which kind of sucks. But I guess that's the point of fashion also. I don't know.
It's complicated, right? Because, well, we have some pictures from a gala that we were all working at. Like, we took a team photo. And she's sitting in just the right way that we can't use those pictures because one of her boobs is just completely out in the picture. And she couldn't care less. Like, I know her well enough to know she didn't give a shit. But, like, we can't.
Yeah.
The symphony staff photo can't be that picture.
And just honestly, I admire people who can do that. But, I, they're inspiring to me. I'm like, good for you. Yeah. But I can't do it. Yeah. I just can't. Yeah. Like, on a rare occasion, I'll wear, like, a chicken cutlet, you know, those sticky things.
Yeah.
If I'm wearing something that I can't wear a bra underneath, but that is the most I'll do.
No, I had some junk haulers in to come get the old mattress and box spring yesterday, and I was like, oh, I better put on a bra. Under my flannel and my t-shirt, right? But it's like, I don't want those things flopping around while I'm around other people.
You get sort of accustomed to having them, like, contained. I wore this outfit the other day for a birthday brunch, and I thought that the sleeves were going to go on my shoulders, and I have like one strapless bra, and I was like, well, I'll wear it. I really don't like wearing it because I just constantly feel like it's like sinking down.
We're on the precipice.
Yes. And I realized I could pull the shoulders up and I could just wear like a regular bra. But wait, I'm going to send this picture to y'all in Slack. I might have already sent this to you, but I thought that I was going to look like when the shoulders were going to be down, I like had this vision of me like looking like a French girl. And I was like, this is going to be so cute. And it was like a fine outfit. But really what I look like, hold on, I'm sending it right now, is I look like a female Waldo.
Oh, we found you.
No, that's cute. That's cute. There she is.
Were you touring a candy cane factory?
No. There was somebody was like, there was a children's entertainer in Dallas called Mr. Peppermint, and it looked like that, or I looked like I was joining like a barbershop quartet or something.
You're a pirate.
So I now have that in my brain. But kind of on that
That's a cute t-shirt, though.
It is. It is cute. But okay, so this is the problem I'm having as an older lady who, it's not like I'm wealthy or anything, but I definitely have somewhat more disposable income than I did when I was in my 20s. I'm grappling with like ethical consumption in that, like, that top is from Amazon and it was totally advertised to me on like Instagram or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's cute. I'm going to get it, like, boop, boop. And then it was delivered to my house a day later or whatever. And I get frustrated when personal responsibility is like the responsibility of taking care of the world is like put on a singular person, you know, just put on people as opposed to corporations. But it's so easy and cheap to buy that kind of stuff, like fast fashion. And I'm trying to get into buying like classic pieces that are a little bit more expensive that last a little bit longer. But then I find some of those don't even last all that long. And, you know, they're also made in China or Thailand or whatever. And not that they don't make good things there, but it's not like it's like, oh, these are made not by children. You know, like if you go to, there's that brand Shein, which I've never bought anything from, and Bridget wanted me to buy stuff, and I was like, I can't do that. That's like too obvious to me that it's made by like slaves.
Everything costs like a dollar, right?
Yeah, it's like too cheap. It's whatever that economic kind of thing is where it's like if it's too cheap, you're like, wait, something has to be wrong with it. There's something gone awry. But I don't know where that lands me. I mean, there's a brand that they sell at Nordstrom that I really like called Veronica Beard. They make really beautiful stuff, but it is expensive. And it's really like, it's not high fashion or anything. It's really for like, you know, it's a little bit dressier, but it's like for the office or going out or whatever. But stuff is so expensive. And I'm like, I'm not quite there yet where I can just like drop $500 on a blazer. You know, I can't really do that regularly. Anyway, so it's just a quandary that I have about fashion. It's like, or style. Like, how do I go forward in my style? I don't want to have junk that I'm throwing away every single year. I'd like to have stuff that I'm keeping and that maybe my daughter one day will want to have or whatever. But I do find
she won't.
She won't. She's like, ugh, disgusting, mom. And it probably like the armpit smell or something. But I don't know. It's just is something that I keep thinking about. Like, I really need to stop. I don't really go to Zara or anything, and I don't really go to H&M, but yeah, like Amazon is the one probably where you just,
it's expensive to have ethical fashion.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. They don't make it easy. And also I'm like, where do I shop? Like, I don't know where to shop that's sort of ethical. I mean, that sounds so stupid besides a Nordstrom. I don't know. And it's just easy to go. If I want something that it's going to be semi-disposable, it's like, all right, I guess I'll go to Amazon. I don't know. I wrestle with feeling guilty. This is how, like, my brain works is, like, I feel guilty, and then I'm like, whatever, I want it, and then I get it. So.
And just feel bad about it.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Meredith, you just put Eileen Fisher.
Late-breaking addition I had to put on the show sheet because I forgot. I want to talk about future fashion.
Yeah.
And I hope that Eileen Fisher still exists when I'm 60, because as I think I've mentioned before, Jocelyn and my retirement plan is to riverboat around Europe until we die. And we're going to be decked out in Eileen Fisher linen drapey linen,
yes,
head to toe the entire time, drinking white wine. I don't even like white wine, but I think that's required on those things. Yes. So
yeah, you have a white wine spritzer.
Yeah. I frequently say I can't wait until I'm old enough to wear Eileen Fisher.
Yeah.
You have to be rich for that, too. So that's also part of it.
Save your money.
Yep.
Get after it. Anything else?
Not for me.
No, I'm just looking at the Eileen Fisher website, and I got to say, the model featured on the front is not in that stage of her life. So
of course not. You can get there now.
You could go now. Get right. These like swooshy linen wide leg pants.
Sounds great.
You can do it.
You can do it. You can do it. I don't know. Where will we be in a few? I don't know. I mean, now there's a Urban Outfitters that's down the street from my office, and occasionally I'll like wander in there, and it is truly like Contemo Casuals in 1995. I'm like, what is going on here? But more expensive, like way more expensive and just as shittily made. I don't know. The kids' fashion. I mean, I do actually respect all Bridget and her friends, all they wear are t-shirts and shorts, which I'm like, you know, I get it.
Good for enjoy them. It while it lasts.
Yeah, I know.
Yep.
Except that they're like Lululemon shorts that cost $90, which I'm like, we can get the Target version. Yeah. Anyway, style. I don't know. Fashion. I don't know. All right. Question of the week. What's the one piece of clothing you can't live without? Yeah. A cardigan's good. I like my jean jacket as well. I have my work jean jacket when it's freezing. Okay. TG recommends, I feel like I've recommended this before, but I just listened to another episode. So, and it was sort of apropos. It's called Articles of Interest. It was produced by like the 99 Invisible people, but now she's on her own. Her name is Avery. I can't remember her last name. Anyway, she
Truffleman.
Does. Yes, Avery Truffleman. She does. She's
seriously.
Yes, she is. Her voice is lovely. And she just kind of does like, you know, just, and it's, I would not say it's like the most, you know, it's not like, oh, it comes out every Thursday. It comes out like maybe once a month, but maybe not even like once every other month. But she's done some really interesting ones. She did one about like nakedness. She did one about modesty, but then she did one in she did one on plus sizes that's really interesting. The one that she did that I loved was prison uniforms. She did it was like a joint thing with Ear Hustle.
Interesting.
And it was really interesting because it was like back in the day they could kind of like dress however they wanted to. But I like it. It's sort of the business of it and and she's very much somebody who's like very into going to vintage stores and shopping like secondhand, which is something that I have a lot of friends that, you know, shop on the RealReal or, you know, Poshmark or whatever. I haven't really ventured into that because I just haven't.
No, I'll never do any of that stuff because my body is so atypical. I'll never find anything long, tall enough for me. Ever.
I know. That's I'm like a little bit, I don't know. Anyway, so, but her stuff is really interesting. So it's a good show. articles of interest.
I think that means it's time to get involved with the show. Please connect with us. We have several different ways for you to do that. Our website is thisshowhaseverything.com. You can join our Facebook group. That's where we post our question of the week, and you can answer it, and we'll read your answer. You can email us at tshishow@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo on your phone, and you can record it as many times as you want so it sounds exactly how you want it, and then email us. And of course, as always, our AOL keyword is tshi, always has been, always will be. And thank you for joining us. That was everything about fashion in our lives.
I don't know. I feel like we opened a can of worms here.
Yeah, we did. I know. Seriously.
I was like, I don't have that much to say about fashion. And then we're at 2 hours and 11 minutes. Yep. Typical.
Well, we all have to wear clothes.
Do we?
Thinking about you and I said I've been there too a few times.